I took an incredible trip to the continent of Africa. I had never been to Africa before. I had never been below the equator. And with two straight weeks off in the summer, thought, this is the time to do it. And I'm going to tell stories from this trip for a few days. We'll not beat you down with it every single day, but it's going to take me a good 3 or 4 days over the next week, week and a half to get to everything.
You have things you want to share.
I have things I want to share, things that were really eye-opening to me, experiencing the other side of the world and different countries that I'd never been to, a different continent, different cultures, different food. And the trip was kind of broken up into four parts. There was the layover in Doha, Qatar, which I'll talk about here in this segment, and then the visit to Cape Town, South Africa, which I'll also get to in this segment. And then I think on Wednesday at this time, we'll talk about the trip into the middle of the continent of Africa to Zimbabwe. An eye-opening visit to a third world country. You're in the heart of the African continent. That'll be on Wednesday. And then on Friday, the trip to Kruger National Park and the wildlife reserve and the up-close experience to all of these animals who are living in the wild. And I've got a great story for you about the time that I thought, I'm telling you, I was 95% convinced I was going to be eaten by a lion. It was coming straight at me, staring at what I thought was me. And I'll tell you that story on Friday. It's probably the most scared I've ever been in my life.
Wow. It is really scary.
It's really scary how close you get to these animals. But I'm going to save all of that for Friday. That was probably the highlight of the trip, almost being eaten by a lion and just getting this close to all of these animals. I tried to document a lot of this on Instagram. I'm at Junes Miller, and I've had 4 or 5 posts, and some of them have 6, 7, 8, 9 different pictures of the animals and Cape Town and Zimbabwe and then later Kruger. And I just posted a few pictures from the layover in Doha, Qatar. So I thought we'd start there. Because going over, as I mentioned an hour ago, we had a 15-hour flight to Doha on Qatar Airways and then a 9-hour flight down to Cape Town. We also, going over, had a 9-hour layover in Doha. And I was really excited about this because I've never been to a Muslim-majority country. So you land in Doha after a 15-hour flight, and Qatar Airways, in competition with Emirates, which is run by UAE, they want people to lay over in Doha. So if you have more than 8 hours of a layover, they give you a free hotel room, a free visa, a free shuttle to the hotel. So it's great. So you've got a place to go, take a little nap, shower, do whatever you want. So we took them up on the offer, went to the hotel, then immediately went out into the town. And it was dinner time. It was 5 p.m., 6 p.m. And we went to the souk, which is the old market. And it's old and new. There was a lot of, you know, I don't know how old, thousands of years old, but a lot of new building. And that's the thing that strikes you about Doha. You know, Qatar got the World Cup bid for 2022.
Yeah.
So they have been building like crazy over the past 8 years. There are tons of skyscrapers and hotels and condos, and they're building all these new soccer venues. And the picture that I just posted, the first picture, is of the skyline of Doha at night. It's mesmerizing. It looks like Manhattan or Tokyo. It's way bigger than Dallas's skyline.
Well, but it is amazing.
The population of Doha is 300,000. They have all of that for a relatively small city.
Hmm. You sure all those are real buildings? Not papier-mâché.
Well, the occupancy rate in those buildings is about 50% because they built them all. They've got all this oil money. A lot of it is new oil money, and a lot of it is World Cup money. They built all this stuff, and then some of the other Arab countries and the Arab Council, they came up with these sanctions and embargoes. So now the occupancy rate is 50%. The tourism has dropped, and so they're begging people to come there and spend their money.
Is it hotter in blazes?
The average high this time of year, which is their summer also, is 110 every day.
Holy
110 every day. You are in the desert.
They believe in air conditioning?
Yeah, they do have air conditioning. Walking around the souk was really interesting. Had dinner at an outdoor cafe there, and they had these big AC units for each table blowing air on you. And then prayer call came. And I'd always heard about prayer call. And in my mind, when prayer call came over the speaker, you hear somebody, you know, start to sing or pray. I always envisioned in a Muslim country, everybody freezes, drops to their knees, and bows to the east and prays.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer call came out around dinner time. Nobody did anything.
What?
Nobody did anything. And it kind of reminded me, I said, wow, this is just like in America. Everybody talks about how religious they are, but when it gets right down to it, very few people
did you ask
walk
someone?
The walk.
Did you ask someone, like, hey, what's the deal? I'm hearing the prayer call.
What am I supposed to do?
Call for prayer? And
the only response I heard or explanation was that we were in kind of a touristy area.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a lot of people either working to serve the tourists or working these booths or stores or restaurants, and they just couldn't pray at that moment.
Hmm.
But I think the real answer is it's not as hardcore as you think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think if you're at Mecca, everybody does that. Or if you're in these other spots, they're a more religious center. If you're in a tourist center or a hotel or a place like Doha, which is very cosmopolitan, mm-hmm. it's not like that. Anyway, pretty eye-opening. The markets were great. Found a big pen of camels, very stereotypical. But
that's what kind of cigarettes they smoke.
They've smoked camels there, understandably. The nine-hour layover was great. Then you get back on a plane, and you've got a nine-hour flight down to Cape Town, South Africa. Got there in the middle of the day. This is on Wednesday of 2 weeks ago. I'd heard so much about Cape Town as being one of the great cities on Earth, and it is. It's a first world city in a third world country is how a friend of ours described it. And that's a perfect description. It's got a weird feel to it. The beauty is incredible. And one of my first Instagram posts showed some of the coastline, the Cape of Good Hope, some of the city, the unique buildings. It's a wonderfully beautiful city with this sketchy criminal element hanging over it at all times. You can be in the nicest neighborhood and every house has barbed wire around it and electric fences, even in the nicest neighborhoods.
Whoa.
And we were told before we went, you can walk pretty much anywhere during the day, but just have your head on a swivel, have everything you want in your front pockets, hold on to your phone tightly. But you're pretty much okay, especially in the tourist areas during the day. Do not go anywhere at night. As soon as the sun falls, take your Uber to your destination, go right in, but don't walk the streets at night.
Mm.
So it's got this element.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, on the first night there, my credit card was stolen.
Really?
What?
Yeah, and this is weird.
Just your number, right? Not your physical
just
credit
the
card.
Just the number. And I let my guard down, and I wasn't told about this, but I should have been more aware. In Europe, and especially in Africa and Asia, I'm sure as well, when you pay for your meal, they bring the credit card machine to your table. Gordon, I know you've seen this. It's this little portable credit card machine. They do the whole transaction there. And a local later told us, never let your credit card out of your sight. And I think at a bar that night, I went up to the bar to pay. And as I recall, the guy may have taken it in the back mm-hmm. because he sized me up as a tourist. And then brought it back out, and the next day I got a fraud alert. So I think I let it out of my sight, and they say that a lot of these waiters or bartenders have their own skimmer, and they'll scan your credit card, they'll skim it, get the number, and then they give it back to you. So that's a lesson.
So sorry.
But it also brings up the question, why don't we have that in this country? Why do we let the credit card out of our sight in this country?
Because we trust people because of magic.
But wouldn't it be more convenient, and although less magical, if they brought the little mini credit card machine to your table at every restaurant and you just did everything right there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you see somebody do that, though, like if you would have followed that guy back behind the bar, what would have happened?
Then you're a big jerk.
Yeah, you can't take my credit card. I mean, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, I probably should have and could have called him out, and you probably would have been okay. He probably would have thought, oh, no, I'm busted, and apologized.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I should have done, but I just wasn't thinking about that.
Yeah.
So there was that sketchy element to it, but that also made it a little more invigorating to visit a place like that. And the cultures there are so many different cultures. And because it was such a stopping point, Cape Town, South Africa, on the trade route, the Indian-European tea route, and the Cape of Good Hope was such a significant place. You've got this incredible infusion of not only different personalities and nationalities and religions, but cuisine. The food there was off the charts good.
What are you eating?
Indian food, Arabic food, African food, all sorts of different types. Mm-hmm. And a lot of dishes that I had never had before. Delicious stuff. We did a day trip, which was a tour of the Cape of Good Hope, basically, the peninsula. And growing up in school, weren't you always taught about the Cape of Good Hope, the southernmost point on the tip of Africa?
Right.
And it's technically not. You go another 200 miles and there's a further southern point that is technically it. But the Cape of Good Hope was such a marker on maps for explorers and trade route. To be at the Cape of Good Hope was a really cool feeling, and it's mesmerizingly beautiful. The water and the cliffs and the lighthouse there that they had to build two different lighthouses because there were so many shipwrecks. I was looking at this lighthouse little history block. I didn't know that's where the Lusitania crashed.
Oh, really?
Was it the Cape of Good Hope? Yeah. I'd always heard that legendary story, but I guess I never put two and two together and realized it was at the Cape of Good Hope. Back in Cape Town, they've got great wine country, beautiful wine country, as beautiful, if not more beautiful, than Napa Valley because of the bigger mountains that are around the wine country. But that was a great visit. To walk around the town of Cape Town was really great. All the different markets and neighborhoods. The District 6 neighborhood was great. You forget that it's only been 25 years since the demise of apartheid.
Isn't that crazy?
It's only been 25 years. There are Nelson Mandela statues, as you might expect, and murals everywhere. He is the father of South Africa. Yet still, there's this feeling of division. The shanty towns still exist. They're everywhere. And there are millions and millions who live in poverty, and yet there's also the really wealthy white neighborhoods. It's still a feeling of division, and I guess you still have that when you drive through our deep south, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And it's been almost 200 years, going on 200 years since the Civil War in this country, but you still have that feeling. So it's only been 25 years there, and the shanty towns, that's a whole segment unto itself. I'd like to talk about the shanty towns and how the people live there, why some of them don't want to get out, how the government is still screwing a lot of them. That whole dynamic of apartheid and only been 25 years, that's an incredible study.
Isn't it shocking how many people in this world live in such incredible poverty that it's hard for us to even imagine?
You know,
I mean, just living under a piece of tin.
Yes.
You know, you have just a few shirts, that's it.
It's a 20-square-foot home or a 40-square-foot home. It's nothing. It's a piece of tin, some plywood, and that's it.
And a piece of cloth for a wall.
Yeah.
Well,
and it does make you, it makes you feel really guilty. I was guilt-ridden the whole trip because we here in America, the average income here in this country is more than their average lifetime income.
Right. Right.
Wow. You know, they're making, in some cases, a few hundred dollars a year. If you're really lucky, a few thousand a year. If you're making $3,000 a year, that's pretty good income if you're living in one of these townships.
People friendly to you as an American for the most part?
You know, yes and no. Some people kept their distance. Some people very friendly. I think it was like any other big town.
Mm-hmm. They didn't treat you like you were the reincarnation of Anthony Bourdain, since you kind of look like him.
You know, I don't get that anymore now that he's dead. I mean,
really?
I still get it, but not nearly as much as when he was producing a show every week. There was one big park, a lot of big parks in Cape Town, but we took one walk through its biggest park, and this audio I couldn't wait to play for you guys because this was a peanut vendor walking through the park, and I could never tell exactly what he was saying other than peanuts, and he had the craziest voice.
Very nice, very peanuts, peanuts.
Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Very nice.
Very nice peanut butter.
So every time I've met a penis vendor in the park.
Peanuts.
Peanuts.
It sounded to me like he was saying, very nice university, peanuts, peanuts, peanuts. Listen.
Very nice, university. Very back to the street.
So overall, the experience in Cape Town was phenomenal. Really beautiful, really interesting city with a really interesting history. A lot of problems. They've got a lot of issues, but what big city doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So over the next few days, on Wednesday, we'll concentrate on Zimbabwe and going into the heart of a third world country. Yeah. On Friday, how I almost got killed by lions.
Zimbabwe.
A great trip.
These pictures are great on Instagram. Everybody needs to check them out. Did you do that with that camera I got you?
Yeah, I wanted to mention that. I brought my rig. Gordo got me that nice camera for Christmas.
Let's identify it again.
Nikon 3500D.
Yeah, D3500.
D3500 right, with a couple different sets of glass. I used a lot of glass on this trip. never used roll.
All right.
But yeah, I had such a blast with that camera, Gordon. I cannot tell you how much fun I had with that camera.
Well, this picture you got of this male lion, I mean, that looks like a stock photo. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's how close we got to the lions.
That's gorgeous.
At Junes Miller is my Instagram if you want to check out any of those trip photos. All right, 8:34 on the ticket. Coming up next, he says he wants to welcome us back from vacation. We'll hear from the Cowboys owner.